Luba Mayakiso, how are you?
Hi.
So we were talking a little bit earlier about the notion of whether black people can be racist, whether Jews can be anti-Semitic, and so on and so forth. We had a discussion, a media summit just over a week ago, where Dr. Nachama Brody said that Julius Malema might be guilty of hate speech, he might be guilty of all sorts of other things, but racism, no, she doesn't believe it, because it's a historical power-related issue and not just one about prejudice. What is your thoughts on this?
Howard, if you can indulge me just for 30 seconds. Here's a real dilemma for me. My mom wants to go to a funeral on Saturday, and I've tried everything I can to dissuade her, and she will not listen to reason.
Can you?
She's 76, and she has high blood pressure. I spoke, she listened, I gave her all the views, I called my brother the doctor, he called her, and we thought we had it so enough. But I know my mother. My mother's the kind of person who listens, keeps quiet, and does her own thing. So a few days later, she called and said to me, son, I've prayed about this, and I thought, wonderful, you know? And then she said, you know how when your dad passed away, we had all these challenges at the funeral, so these things happened at funerals, and I thought, wonderful, she's seen the light. Mm-hmm. Instead of made arrangements, I'm going to drive there and come back same day. It's a 500-kilometer trip one way.
Oh my word.
And I'm saying to her, mom, how do you drive 6 hours one way, attend the funeral, drive 6 hours back? No, I won't eat. I won't do anything.
Yeah, Luba, I think it's tragic. It's tragic that your mother had two flat tires the morning she wanted to leave.
Yeah, it's terrible.
No, sadly, I'm in Cape Town, just East London. All I said was, mom, I've given you my view. I will not argue with you. But you know where I stand.
Right.
I
mean, so Luba, just to give you a little bit of a comparison on our smile in our environment is, my father thinks that it is absolutely ridiculous that shuls are not open. He thinks we're a weak, weak generation. The guy's 83 years old. He's got more comorbidities than is imaginable. And, he thinks we're basically a weak generation. And his biggest worry, he said to me the other day, is how long it's going to take shuls to encourage people to get back. I said, yes, especially the dead ones. They are going to take much longer to get back to shul. So at the same time, we have taken his car keys away.
I can't in my case, because what's happened is I've got two cousins who stepped up and offered to fetch it. And I mean, I've had to phone my cousins and said, guys, stay in your lane. You know, if you want to be, you know, kind of cavalier with your own parents, be my guest. But this is my mom. The poor one guy is an orphan, so I didn't want to be rude, but I politely said, look, just leave this one to me. It's my mom. And, you know, it's difficult because her arguments are, this is her only surviving brother. But I'm saying, mom, all of you, you're the youngest at 76. All of you have high blood pressure. You pop your pills every single day. So you're the classic worst, you know, demographic to go there. And there's nothing I can do. I even tried hinting they should use Zoom, but my mom doesn't even have Wi-Fi. But I don't know what to do.
I think there's very little you can do, in truth. This is now up to her.
They won't social distance. I know that.
No, of course not.
They will not. Her sister is a retired nurse, and she went there. She was the first to get to the home. And you know, I mean, black funerals, I said, mom, the church says, what church? We're doing, it's been done at home. And I said, oh, heavens help me. That's even worse. I said, you know,
well, Zanati, maybe do you want to make it worse and talk about your family, Zanati?
Yeah, also, like, honestly, half of my family's got it because they went to a funeral.
Wiped them out, funeral. No joke. But they're deadly, these funerals.
But that's the thing, is that also in that generation, you get judged for also not attending a funeral.
And that's what Howard was saying earlier about, sure, the moral imperative.
But I'm saying, for goodness sakes, I mean, this is, you can handle being judged. But you're alive, you know, and, you know, I talk to her and she listens quietly. She doesn't argue. She just listens. And then when she phones me back, says, son, I've got this sorted out. And like I'm saying, I mean, if you think that's bad, my mum's a person who we phoned one day in Alice. Somebody answered the phone, said, can you speak to my mom? And the person said, no, she doesn't live here anymore. I said, what do you mean? She said, no, she sold the house to us 3 months ago. And then I tracked her down on the cell. I said, "Mom, what happened?" She says, "No, I knew you wouldn't agree with your brother, so I decided to sell the house and bought another one." I mean, she moved from one town, Alice, to East London, 150 k's away.
She really does her own thing.
Yeah, Luba, you don't stand a chance, pal. Nothing. Exactly. Nothing. She can
but
pretend to listen.
But I am worried, Howard, because it's that. Then I took my 21-year-old to work, and he told me, look, one of the guys who works with, somebody tested positive at this guy's house, but the guy came to work. So we sat there, and I phoned the owner, and the owner said, I'm a small business. I'm worried about income. So I eventually said to my son, look, you're not going there to work today. And he said to me, Dad, not a problem. It is a public holiday, so I would have earned double pay. So if you think you can sort me out, I'm happy to go back home with you. You know, so I had to pay this guy his lost wages for the day. And then he would return home with me. But otherwise, he felt, you know, he'd social distance and sanitize. He works in a printing shop.
Yeah, this is
so he was happy to stay at home, but it cost me. Anyway, Howard, come back to your question. You know, the challenge with this is that traditionally, I would agree with the response that you got, because the perception is that racism is something based on power and influence, and it's a historic issue. So the view, if you don't want to be lynched by the woke mob, is that black people can't be racist because we don't have we can't discriminate because we don't have the position, the power. So it's derived from power. So if you go back to slavery, the transatlantic slave trade, you would then say one group had power and they viewed themselves as superior, and they could enforce that superiority through laws, through, you know, sheer brute power and all of those things. So the argument then would be that black people may be prejudiced against other people, but the classic definition of racism, no, because you need to have an ability to have power and be able to influence how the other person behaves and acts and thinks and so forth. So that's generally what you will encounter.
The question is, and one that Howard raised earlier, Howard, are you still there?
Yes, sure.
That Howard raised earlier is that somebody like Julius Malema is a man of tremendous power. Now, he might not have had power historically, but certainly today he's much more powerful than any of the four of us in this conversation. So when does that dissipate? Does that mean in perpetuity a black person on this definition can never be a racist, and we need to find a new term for that type of prejudice? Or does that ultimately, or can some black people be racist and others can't be?
I think the definition was probably coined at a time when the tables were very skewed. And now that things are changing, nobody has had the courage to relook the definition. And I think right now, as long as some people are still oppressed, it's almost taboo to go back and say, well, can we talk about this definition? It's becoming fluid and some things are changing. Yes, I mean, if you take South Africa, you would say that black people weren't in power, didn't have authority, didn't have power, didn't have influence. Things have changed. So one could turn around and argue and say, well, in post-94, the tables have turned, and certainly in terms of, might not be economic power, but some forms of power. So I think in time, it'll be possible to relook the definition, but right now is a seriously bad time to even open the discussion and say, can we relook the definition? It's a difficult one. You know, I had this discussion, you know, my experience about school. So now one of my old schools, St. Andrews, has got, it's formed in there's Old Andrian. So all the black kids who went to St. Andrews have now formed a social group, and we're discussing these issues. And it's been interesting to see how things have changed over time from my time to where they are. Some things haven't changed at all, but there's been progress in some others where you might find that I was a lone voice. Now there are a lot more kids at school. So it is a changing dynamic, but until I think you've probably got 80% of the change completed, it's probably going to be very difficult to challenge the definition, especially if you're not viewed as classically black. So right now, Howard, I would say, let sleeping dogs lie. It's a battle that you just aren't going to win.
You see,
I understand your rationale.
When Luba says changing the definition, the question is, sorry, what definition? the definition as described racism in terms of dictionaries fits perfectly into what I'm saying. There's an attempt to rechange the definition that, that says that those historically powerless cannot be racist. But that applies differently in every country because every country has its own different history. In China, can a Asian person be racist?
I mean,
in,
for example, in
a country like Liberia, which was never subject at all to colonialization, can a black person in Liberia be racist while the person in the next country, which was colonized, do the same rules apply?
I think if we step away from the dictionary and say to ourselves, when has racism generally been used? And it's tended to be almost a Northern Hemisphere versus South issue, colonialism, because you'd find that generally, if you spoke to people in Africa about racism, they would look at their former colonial masters, be it Portugal, France, you know, the UK. And if you went to Asia and you dealt with racism, it would tend to not necessarily look at their neighbors, but again would look at the United Kingdom. I think it would be interesting to hear how, you know, how people define the relationship between, let's say, the Japanese and the Chinese. Because I think certainly, if you look at the definition of racism, with China and Japan, it would certainly apply historically. If you go back to some of the great wars. But now whether they would use that, I don't quite know. I don't have enough experience.
What about somebody like Louis Farrakhan? I mean, he's most certainly a bigot. He's anti-Semite. He's all sorts of things. Has he been a person who's been disempowered and therefore can't be classified by that definition as a racist? Or is he? But he's certainly something. He's a vile, vile hater. How do we classify him if not racism? And that's maybe what I battle with. And I really do hear this, the nuanced definitions around it. My problem is there seems to be a vacuum around, an alternative. So if they're not racists, if Louis Farrakhan is not a racist, then what is he? If Julius Malema and his words against the Indian community and white people in South Africa, if that not isn't racism, well, what is it?
Howard, it's the challenge is it's there's some very powerful things that you're trying to define because you see, let's be honest, racism is almost a response that I can use to silence anybody who's white. You know, I can say you're racist, and I can claim that I can not be racist. So it's almost like a get out of free jail card that I can play, and I know that there's no comeback from. But what it doesn't help do is look at what has happened within our country, or even in Africa, for instance. I mean, if you take the case of Rwanda, the genocide, you'd have to ask yourself and say, now what is that? Is that just prejudice? Because these were two people who previously didn't have power. And now they had some power. The French went really there. You know, how do you classify that? How do you look at, situation for instance, in Sudan? And I think those are the ones for me that are worrying because the classic definition that people want to use would kind of absolve them and say that's not racism. But somehow if it's prejudice, then it's an extreme form of prejudice that's in many cases even worse than racism. And there lies the challenge is that racism by almost has color that comes with it in the modern interpretation. So whenever you try and apply it, in the absence of a difference in skin color, it's almost, you're then told, no, you can't use it amongst black people. Or if it's something thought by a white person. That's why I'm saying there lies the challenge. But I do believe that it is going to change. I'm just saying right now, people are very uncomfortable with that change. It's almost like the Black Lives Matter versus All Lives Matter kind of discussion where somebody's saying, whoa, hold on, this is not the time for that. We're talking about black lives. Yes, all lives matter, but right now, this is where our focus is. So the issue of racism, I think, is being given a very narrow definition to suit a particular end right now. And it suits those who use it, just to keep it very narrow.
Very interesting indeed. Before we wrap up, Zanati, your thoughts?
I think we do need to differentiate between racism and prejudice, but I feel like they're so close to each other that it's very, very difficult. And also Howard and I touched on, can black people be racist towards other black people as well? Mm. And I've actually just thought about it. Maybe I kind of realized that maybe it's self-hate and not necessarily racism. Would you agree, Luba?
Can you explain what you mean by self-hate? So
one black person treating another black person, you know, differently or in a, you know, demeaning manner, or maybe calling them the K word. Would that be considered racism?
Okay, that I can understand, but let's say about dynamics in this country, where, you know, generally many of us have viewed people from Lupopo with some disdain for whatever reasons, especially the groups along the coast, the Xhosa and the Zulu. How would you define that?
That's the thing. Mm. So is it?
Because to me, there's no insecurity. I mean, I know the Xhosa people, there's a complete belief that no, we are generally different to the other guys. We're superior to them. It might be misguided. But it's not a, there's no insecurity. It's just a blind belief that, look, you can't put me in the same boat. Hence, I think we saw even in the ANC that for many years, you know, before we had the current president, we had Zuma, we had Mbeki, we had Mandela. There was almost this unwritten kind of thing that, the leader would come from the Xhosa or the Zulu, would not come from the other racial groups and tribal groups. Mm-hmm. And we have looked down on the other tribal groups. I mean, it's a fact.
Mm.
I would pose a slightly different question. A question would be, can a South African Indian be racist towards black people? Because here you have one oppressed group to structural racism. I think we all know Indian people in South Africa who have expressed racist views. But are we going to let them off the hook because they too have been discriminated against?
Well, look, I wrote my article on Facebook and I had one or two people kind of try and lynch me. But my experience has been South Africa created a strata. So South Africa wasn't like the US where there was plain black and white. South Africa had white, Indian, colored, and then African at the very bottom. So certainly in dealing, I mean, the case I've used before where my brother had a girlfriend at varsity at medical school for many years was Indian. And she had the view that her parents would never countenance a mixed marriage between the two of them. So he eventually walked away from the relationship because that's the view he had. If you ask people in KZN, they will tell you that they feel that prejudice or racism from the Indian community. I've spent many years in Cape Town, and I know that many colored people don't view themselves as black, and I've felt incredible hatred from them. And I've always felt that they were the biggest in terms of enforcers of apartheid legislation. So they weren't necessarily white. They seem to have had some power, not derived from being superior, but they were given power by legislation to enforce certain things.
Doesn't this conversation really take us away from some of the issues? Because we spend so much time trying to work on a definition of something or a word that applies that actually, in reality, we're not saying anything different. What we're saying is that in many cases, racism has been about historical disempowerment. In some cases, it's baseless hatred. In some cases, it is just prejudice and fear of the unknown. But the reality is that at the end of the day, it's all pretty much the same thing. Yes, of course, we need to understand it better in order to fight it, treat it, deal with it. But at the end of the day, when we spend our time talking about a word that relates to it and arguing why it doesn't that actually do us more damage?
Yes, Howard, but I think the more I think about it, I would say you're never going to change human beings from prejudice or what they feel towards somebody. I think that's a social experiment that we can never complete. But I think for me, all of this can be irrelevant in the absence of power. Because once you have some power, then you're able to act out that. So if you go to Rwanda, for instance, the two tribes, they may not have liked each other, but until one had power, military or government or whatever, then they were able to massacre the other ones. So if you come to South Africa, whether my colored brother doesn't like me or not may be irrelevant. But if he has the means to make my life difficult, given some power, then it becomes a problem. Because we're talking of the heart, and you can't legislate against somebody's heart. I can't force somebody to like me. Even if they don't like me, it really makes no difference. But if they have the means to make my life difficult because they don't like me, there lies a problem. So I think it does in some way come back to the power that I can act out my prejudice or my racism because I have power. If you take away that power, then who really cares what my views are? And I think for me, that's a very valid point.
Howard, your last word, and then we need to unfortunately wrap it up.
I just want to say we all have power because we have power in the way we treat everyone we deal with every single day. The Uber driver, the person in the shop that we see, the people who we work with in our work environment, all of us have a power to either do good or do bad. And if we permit the evil within people's hearts to triumph, if we allow that racism to perpetuate by giving it a different name, I think we do ourselves and society in general a great injustice.
All right, and that is where we leave it. Questions. This is from Vaughan. If I don't like a black person and I tell him this, why is this interpreted as racism? If I don't like a white person, it's just me not liking a person. Well, I think that would probably depend, Vaughan, if you are a racist or not. I think that, of course, you can not like a person irrespective of their color, whether they're black, white, or anything else.
I think it's very interesting that Luba says that you need to just check if a person has the means to make your life difficult.
I do like that. For me, that was an important point that he made. M says racist comes from the word racist comes from the word race, which is that's from M. Clive says this is all semantics. Michael wants to know how is xenophobia classified. Michael, I would urge you to read a book, and I've got to remember the name. I think it's East Meets West or West Street East Street. I'll get the name for you. It is the most brilliant book, and it actually traces the development and the history of the word genocide as well as xenophobia. It's just very, 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 very interesting.